Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, as many of you know, we've been crisscrossing the country with our Turning Point USA campus tour. And thank you for all of you that are coming to AmericaFest, tpusa.com/AMFEST, December 18, 19, 20, 21. Well, as part of our tour, our Exposing Critical Racism tour, we went to University of Alabama, where I got some of the most interesting questions that you will hear about the vaccine. Are Black people being hunted at the University of Alabama? Rather interesting dialogue back and forth, I guess you could put it, and so much more. You will love this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show as we continue our work to bring you two podcasts a day, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. I want to thank those of you that have supported our show and get behind the work we are doing and to allow us to continue to grow and flourish here at the Charlie Kirk Show. I want to thank Jeanette from Wyoming. Thank you. I want to thank Joni from Dana Point. Thank you. Julia from Hawaii. Thank you. Elizabeth from Washington, Maria from Tennessee, Laura from California, thank you. Jennifer from Washington, Sean from Illinois, Jared from Kentucky, and I want to thank Joanne from Texas, charliekirk.com/support for getting behind the work we are doing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It helps us hire more staff. It helps support us and keeps us growing and cancel proof. charliekirk.com/support to help us in our mission to reach millions of young people every single month. That is our goal. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. Our campus stop at the University of Alabama. They say Roll Tide. I'll let you decide that or not. And text this to your friends, and also make sure you're subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show. They just changed their homepage up a little bit. So make sure that plus button is checked. When you have the Charlie Kirk Show podcast feed up, make sure that is checked and get your friends to do the same. Okay, buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. What a great group. Hey, everybody. This is awesome. Here we have a couple friends outside too that are protesting or whatever. I wish they would have come in. Yeah, well, it's actually unusually cold for this time of year, isn't it? I just want to say I love Alabama. It's awesome to be here, and I've been here a couple times, and there's a lot we have to talk about tonight, but it's kind of a good day to be an American, isn't it? I mean, geez, it's just after the last 24 hours, I kind of just feel as if there's some good things happening. We're going to talk about that and so much more. I just want to first say, do we have anyone here from Auburn? If so, you're not allowed to be here. I'm kidding. No, I was told to do that, and by the Turning Point chapter. I want to first say this is the last tour stop that we have on the road. We're doing University of Arizona next week. We added that, but what better place to end our tour at University of Alabama? I want to thank all of our Turning Point leaders that work so hard promoting this event. You guys are a great chapter, and you do a wonderful job. Let's give it up for our Turning Point leaders. They do such a great job. And I also want to give it up for our amazing tech team, the Farnsworth brothers. So we've been doing this across the country from everywhere you can imagine. Vermont to University of Oregon, which I'm a big fan of. Go Ducks. We'll talk about that later. By the way, we can all get along. Alabama and University of Oregon are both currently in the college football playoff rankings. We'll see what happens and what changes. We can have a whole college football segment if you want, which I'll really start offending people. Because I won't tell you who I was cheering for in the A&M game. I won't. It would be foolish to say that at this school. But I didn't tell you. But no, we've been all across the country, Boise, Michigan, Minnesota. And a lot of you, I'm sure a lot of you have caught some of the clips and some of the tapes of our tour, some of the interactions. Well, there's a whole kind of behind the scenes crew that makes all that happen, that goes across the country, gets here hours early, They set up, they have to deal with internet issues and all that. And it's our amazing tech team. If you guys listen to any of our podcasts when we speak, it's hard work. It is to do that for many weeks on the road. And millions of people are impacted by kind of them just dedicating themselves to go kind of be the support structure of a tour. And they never get any thanks for that. So let's just give it up for our amazing tech team these last couple of weeks. They've been incredible. They really have. So the Farnsworth brothers, I'll tell you, they're great. They're great Americans. So, my goodness, there's a lot I want to go into tonight. And a lot of it actually is Alabama centric, which is going to be a lot of fun. Let's just talk about the last 24 hours. I'm going to talk about this, not even in political terms, because I just think that's a little bit sloppy and boring. You guys could watch that other places. I want to go a step further and deeper. Some of you may or may not have saw the news last night. But all of a sudden, all the smart people on television are super confused why all of a sudden Americans are so angry about forced vaccinations, mask mandates, and kind of this, what we call on our show, the great woke-lash, right? Which is this backlash against the institutional wokeism that has been kind of pervading American society over the last the last 18 months, and especially the last year. And what we saw from all across the country, from Virginia to Seattle, we're going to go through all of it tonight. And again, not in political terms, but just looking at it from a very factual standpoint of trying to analyze what's happening, people are more disgusted than ever than the people that are ruling them. And there has never been a greater disconnect between the people that run the country and the people that make the country run, right? So I kind of want to make that distinction. Those are two totally different things. And so there's this kind of common sense argument that a lot of people say, which is like, well, that goes against common sense. You hear that all the time, right? Well, what does that actually mean? Well, that means is that using practical judgment or prudence, you know, in the Greek word prudentia, it would just say like, that wouldn't work in the job that I am doing. So let's just pick any profession. How about a truck driver, right? Which is the center, the hero that I want to talk about tonight, which I think is going to be a lot of fun to share, which is if you're a truck driver and you do one thing and you say one thing and you do another, you'll be fired from your job. If you don't show up on time or you act in huge hypocrisy, you'll be fired from your job. This is someone that would kind of be part of what I would call the muscular class in America. So there's two types of economic classes in America. And by the way, one is not necessarily better than the other, right? There's the muscular class and then there's the Zoom and Skype class, right? So I'm part of the Zoom and Skype class, okay? That doesn't make me a better person. It just so happens I was able to keep on doing my work in the midst of the lockdown without having to lift boxes or wear a mask all day long. But the people that actually run the country, which I think never got the credit they deserved, quite honestly, during the pandemic, are the people that worked at the Amazon fulfillment centers, the people that are our police officers, the people that are our firefighters, the people that actually drove trucks. And instead, you saw this growing disconnect of the people in charge have this arrogance and this attitude, almost this top-down revolution, like, oh, you work with your hands, you don't have a doctorate from Harvard, you're dumb and you're stupid, right? And so, but we saw this bubbling up in a variety of different ways. And for those of us that look at this stuff really closely and are worried about these trends, we said, this is not sustainable. You can't declare war on the people that actually make your country run and act as if there won't be a backlash against that, right? It's like, just keep on serving me food, serfs and servants. And we'd always make jokes about it. You know, when Nancy Pelosi would be out in Napa Valley and all of her donor friends were maskless, right? And every single person serving food outdoors were wearing masks. Right. And we saw that with Obama's birthday party in Martha's Vineyard, where, you know, we had to kind of watch all the videos of people that had to wear masks. They were maskless, but they were a sophisticated, vaccinated crowd. And we saw that some people call it double standards or hypocrisy. It's not. It's hierarchy. It's people in charge that think they're actually better than you. Right. So hypocrisy is like if you actually believe the rule or you say it and you do something else. These are people that actually think they're at a different level of existence. So the thing I want to start with tonight, though, and kind of really focus on is what happened the last 24 hours. And some of you might say, oh, Charlie, you're going to talk about the Virginia governor's race. You're going to talk about how in Seattle they just elected a pro-police conservative Republican as head of their city attorney in Seattle. Like, wow, that's shocking. No, actually, I want to introduce all of you and our audience watching at home, thanks to our wonderful tech team, to one of the most unbelievable stories in the history of American politics. And whether you're a liberal here tonight, and by the way, thank you for coming. If you are on the left, I mean that non-sarcastically. It says a lot to actually go hear about someone you might disagree with or hear those ideas, because who knows what you're hearing on college campuses. Alabama's great, right? No liberals at Alabama, right? It's just terrific. Yeah, see, there you go. But no, this when I saw this story, did anyone watch the live stream last night that I was doing? I don't think I've laughed that hard in my entire life. When I just saw this, I was flipping through social media, and I couldn't control myself when I saw this story of this truck driver from Southern New Jersey who spent $153 total on his campaign. $153. And as of right now, the election's about to be called and certified. He's about to beat the second most powerful person in New Jersey, the head of the Senate presidency in New Jersey, by 2,000 votes, right? And so and by the way, this is not even about like Republican or Democrat. It's not about any of that, right? It's about, wait a second, timeout. Like, what? And so I did some digging into this, right? I was like, okay, who is this guy, right? Like, is he a son of Jeff Bezos, or like, you know, is he part of the Rockefeller family, or was he born with some sort of birthright? And so you look at this guy, and his name is Durr, right? And yeah, you could laugh at the name, whatever. But you look into it, it's like if you were to have central casting of like what the normal American was. Now, some of you guys might not remember the 2016 or 2012 presidential debates of that guy that wore that like red sweater. Do you remember that? Ken Bone, right? Thank you. You guys remember that? Maybe not. It's before your time. It's like, I just want to give that guy a hug, right? It's like, it's just, there's not, you just want what's right for the world. There's so few people like that anymore, it seems, in public life. And so this guy, Ed Durr, decides to do the ultimate David and Goliath type exercise. Now, I don't know how, I'm going to do my best to describe this to you. The guy he was running against is the head of the Senate of New Jersey, okay? It's untouchable. An example would be like if a random candidate decided to run up against Chuck Schumer. Okay. Or a random candidate would just be like, I'm going to run against Nancy Pelosi. This guy runs the state of New Jersey. Now, he was, to give you an idea, he's been in elected office since 2004. Some of you were born in 2004. Okay. I know that, because I actually just talked to someone that was literally born in 2006, not even born. And so, this guy has run the state of New Jersey. He runs the entire political apparatus and machine. And so when you start to look into it, you're like, all right, how did this guy make it happen? So you look at his campaign receipts. You're like, did he get a big contribution from the pharmaceutical companies? Spent $153, $85 of which was spent at Dunkin' Donuts. And the remaining $70 was spent on flyers and materials. And so they said, what was your grand strategy? He's like, I just kind of showed up and asked people for their vote. And so he was conducting an interview last night. The first thing he said is like, I have no idea what's going on, right? It's the first thing he says, like, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But no, I'm kidding. But all of a sudden you read deeper into this, and this is an important thing, is he ran because he was so disgusted and he was so upset that he, as a truck driver, continually kept this economy opening and keep going. And he just felt continually insulted by the people in charge. And so Durr, who didn't go to Harvard, who's a father of three, a grandfather of six, rides a Harley as an Eagles fan and is a truck driver. Again, like central casting, right? Like if you were to design like the middle class, like Joe the plumber candidate, it's that guy. It looks like he's going to displace the Senate president in New Jersey. He's winning by 2,000 votes. And so regardless of your political affiliation here tonight or whatever your view of it, there's got to be something where all of a sudden we take a timeout, right? Like, wait a second, that's not normal. And it's not even about conservative or liberal, right? It's about people in charge versus people that are getting suppressed and people that are being crushed by the regime. And it's this simple. It's citizens versus subjects. When you are all of a sudden having a campaign where you don't campaign, okay? Dunkin' Donuts and $75 for flyers, that's not campaigning, okay? In that district, to give you an idea of how competitive it was 8 years ago, it was a $17 million race. Now it's a $153 race, okay? Goes from $17 million to $153. What that should just send a massive message to every American out there is that the people, the voters themselves, are willing to pull the five fire alarm and go through and say, I don't know who you are, but I'm sick of you saying that you have to mask my children while you get to go walk to whatever restaurant you want and have to wear a mask. I'm sick of seeing my relatives that are police officers have to walk off the force because they don't want to take a vaccine for a virus they've already had two times. I'm sick and tired of seeing my church get locked down while the liquor store remains open in southern New Jersey. I'm sick and tired of seeing that every time I turn on television, Fauci's telling me that I'm a bad person because I don't want to take some sort of experimental vaccine. And all of a sudden you saw this pressure cooker, right? And thank goodness for the founding fathers and the framers for giving us this type of system, right? Where the ultimate check and balance on power, the ultimate way that we're actually able to hold people in charge is by showing up at elections. And so this guy has been doing some interviews. They said, well, what's your agenda? And he said, look, my agenda is very simple, right? I just want people like me to have a voice. And this is not like a new thing in politics, right? But it's never been so bad. It's never been so bad and so exaggerated. And what showed me last night is that the very same type of behavior that people engaged in 2016 when Donald Trump got elected has not stopped, which is this. Voters are trying to get their leaders' attention. They are willing to go vote for the truck driver over the Senate president. It's like, will you please start listening to us and start representing us? And that's regardless of political affiliation. And again, it goes through this divide of the people that run the country and the people that make the country run. And so if you're able to do that, because a couple different things I want to just focus on with the Ed Durst story. Number one, if anyone here or watching online is in a heavy liberal area and you're like, oh, there's nothing I could do about it. Like, no, that's not true. If you can win and displace the second most powerful person in New Jersey, the $153, half of which being spent on Dunkin' Donuts, which is an unbelievably suspicious amount of money being spent on Dunkin' Donuts, by the way, like $83, like what are you buying, right? Then every single person in this room and watching online, you can make a difference. Like you can turn your community, you could turn your campus in a direction that other people would never have expected. But the other thing that I think is so incredibly important is that he decided to do something about it. And this is another thing, is that he didn't just want to sit idly by and be a spectator and kind of just be a participant, right? He's like, no, I got to get in the arena myself. And that is one of the things that makes America so different and so unique, is that we have a participatory system that allows us to actually engage yourself. For example, you don't like something, go fix it yourself. And what's so amazing is he was telling the story. He's like, yeah, all my family and friends were laughing at me. They were mocking me. They were ridiculing me, being like, you're never going to win. And he's like, the last couple weeks of the campaign, all I did was I called my mom and she just said, I'm praying for you every morning and you're going to win. And it's like this story where it's like, wow, that's a glitch in the actual political matrix of the country. And I think this is only growing, by the way. I think that what we saw in the last week is a revival of the American citizen. And we're all of a sudden to see the kind of rejection of there's nothing I can do. I just have to sit idly by. You know, things are going to stay as they are. And instead, the exact opposite. But I want to move on to this other one that I think is super interesting and important, which is this question of what is the ruling class? Because you're going to hear me kind of talk about this a lot, which is we have a group of people in our country that have been not elected, that have been unaccountable for far too long. The best example of this is someone, if you're a young person, he has impacted your life significantly, that never should have had as much power as he had, Fauci. Fauci should be in prison, not the head of NIH, first of all, for everything he's done against our country. But this is someone that is in an extra constitutional position in our country. This is someone that people did not go vote for. This is someone who is largely unaccountable. He was unknown and he has unchecked and unlimited power to be able to say that we need to go force vaccines on people against their will. Now, let me just talk about the vaccine for a second. I don't care if you got vaccinated. Do they force it at University of Alabama or do they just strongly recommend it? Strongly recommend it. Yeah. Well, that's better than most schools. Employees were forced. Medical exemptions allowed and religious. There's a couple. Okay, that's good. So I want to just say you guys have a much better situation than most schools. Some schools, they're kicking students out of schools across the country. So you guys should be very thankful that in Alabama, that if that's your medical decision you want to make, then so be it, right? But again, I'm not going to talk. If you guys want to talk about the vaccine, that's fine. I don't care. I'm not getting the vaccine and I'm going to fight to the death to make sure that no one's going to force to get the vaccine against their will. And so simple medical choice issue, right? Especially if you've already had the virus before, naturally immunized. But I think beyond that, how Fauci and the corrupt interests around him have been so effective at suppressing any sort of conversation around azithromycin, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, monoclonal antibodies, and aspirin. And it might not be for you, right? These things might not be things that you might be interested in, or, you know, I don't want to hear about it. Fine. The fact you're not even allowed to talk about it online, the fact that there is this top-down censorship campaign is really creepy. And we're talking about something that has now shown to help certain people that have been diagnosed with this. So you think to yourself, wait a second, we locked down our country for nearly a year. We canceled school altogether at most parts of the country. We shut down the church. We forced masks on people, and which is dehumanizing in nature, by the way. And I believe that masking children is child abuse, pure and simple. I think when you try to put a four-year-old with a mask for a virus they're not at a significant risk of dying from, I think it's total, complete child abuse, and it stunts their development altogether. And by the way, just so you know, that if a child were to ride in the car to this event, as there's a couple here tonight, they're at far greater risk in the car ride over to this event than from catching and dying from the Fauci virus, right? Far greater, like 20 times higher risk. But no, that would be way too prudent and way too common sense to talk about. Instead, at a deeper and more fundamental level, most of these decisions from the public health side of it were made without your consent. And it's a violation of the consent of the governed. And so that kind of goes back to what I just talked about with Mr. Durr in New Jersey, is that people feel like, what else am I supposed to do to get your attention? Because you've been using government force. You've been using force to micromanage my life for the last year and a half, and I'm not going to put up with it anymore. And I just want to say that young people in particular, and this is why I'm so excited about Turning Point USA, is that if you want to, this is what's, it's kind of shocking about kind of the people on the left, like, yeah, we're the rebels. Like, yeah, right, sure. It's like, if there's any demographic that should be pushing against lockdowns and vaccine mandates, it should be high school and college kids. I mean, in some ways, it's just so funny to see the people that are like protesting for systemic change in our country. And then all of a sudden they're like, you better get the vaccine and listen to everything that you are told, or else you're a terrible person. I'm like, where's the fighting spirit now when they want to go put a jab in your arm for something that has questionable outputs at best? And it really kind of does go to this question that I think that's really important, is who's in charge, which is who's actually in charge of our country. And it should be you. It should be the citizens, right? Citizen comes from a Greek word, which means co-ruler or equal say in the government. And the government should be a project of, by, and for the people. And again, I'm not saying that there isn't a place for rulers, obviously. I'm not saying that we should get rid of all the rulers. That would be something that someone on the radical left would say. I said we need better rulers. We need rulers more like Ron DeSantis and less like Anthony Fauci.
The real estate market is extremely hot right now. People are taking advantage of low interest rates and economic uncertainty by investing in real assets. Whether you are a first-time buyer or just looking to make a change, the key is to getting the property you want is being pre-qualified and having cash in hand. That's why you guys, all of us, myself included, I had to stop doing this. I had to stop using the big banks. I used a big bank for a loan previously. It was a disaster. It took forever. Not to mention, I go look at their score on secondvote.com. Like, wow. My loan helped fund abortions, BLM Incorporated, burning down of Wendy's, the destruction of our society. I'm done with it. Then I met Andrew and Todd. Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian, who have become great friends of mine, andrewandtodd.com. They are with Sierra Pacific Mortgage. My producer, Andrew, he's working with them right now, and he tells me they are part counselors, part financial planners, and they're really helping them, and I'm about to use them for something. I've been so impressed by them. But they are bankers, not brokers. That means that they can start and help you. They can help you start to finish. But quite honestly, let's divest and take all of our money out of these woke banks. So maybe you're buying a new home. Maybe you're refinancing. Whatever process you're going through, just fill out a couple simple questions online at andrewandtodd.com. They can assess your situation right over the phone. Go to andrewandtodd.com or call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172. Even if you have a friend who's buying a home, I'm sure every single person knows someone that's buying a home. Just put your arm around them and say, hey, go to andrewandtodd.com. Charlie Kirk speaks favorably of them. Here's what I can guarantee with andrewandtodd.com. Zero of the proceeds will go to fund abortion. Zero will go to fund BLM. Zero will go to fund the woke industrial complex instead. Andrew and Todd, they support shows like ours. They want to help patriots, Christians, and people that love their country and love the Lord take out loans and do it correctly. So go to andrewandtodd.com, call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172. andrewandtodd.com. Support the good guys and stop supporting companies and banks that hate you. The banks have waged war on our values. Time to say sayonara, vaya con Dios. Alvita Sane, I'll be going to andrewandtodd.com.
There's this dilemma that I think is in front of us right now that I think is really important. And the dilemma, I think last night actually kind of explained it really well, is what do we do about the things we're not allowed to talk about? And that's one of the things I want to talk about. Like, what do you do about the things that are thought crimes, right? And this is what's so great about elections is that you're able to do it in privately, or unless you're supposed to be able to do it in privately, right? Which this is why we named our entire tour what we did, which is critical racism tour, or critical race theory. And I don't need to dwell on this too much. I know a lot of you have seen plenty of videos on this from us. But pure and simple, we did this tour because diversity, equity, inclusion, wokeism, whatever you want to call it, seeping into every single portion of American life is threatening every single young person's future. And so what is it? So CRT, it's an academic theory that's not just an academic theory. It's now in every single form of American life, from academics to military to corporate. And I'll prove to just some examples in front of you, which it is a basis of trying to say we are going to judge, we are going to stereotype, we're going to organize people based on the color of their skin. And super simply put, it's saying that things you cannot change are more important than things you can change, right? Saying that your skin color is super important. Let me boil it down even easier to you. 75 schools across the country have black-only dormitories. 75 schools across the country where they say we are going to have dormitories for white people and dormitories for black people. Explain to me how that is not resegregation and Jim Crow 2.0. Well, it is. It's racism. You don't have to overcomplicate it. And anyone defends it is a racist. And so now we have the reemergence of American racism under this veiled cloak of wokeism. At Columbia University, they have black-only graduation ceremonies. I was always raised in a country, you were too, that if you judge people based on the color of their skin, you're a racist. Oh, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to walk in this graduation ceremony because you have a different melanin content color of your skin? Yes, that's ridiculous. You don't have to overthink it. I don't have to give an hour and a half lecture on why that's wrong. It's racist and it's bigoted, but it's happening everywhere. I'll give you another example. Western Washington University, black-only dormitories. In Georgia, anyone from Georgia, the great state of Georgia, Atlanta, they are now putting in sixth grade courses. Ah, go Braves. That's good. I saw that. I was so thrilled to see that. Not an Astros fan. Don't mean to offend anybody. It's funny. I get more people are offended by my sports takes, by the way, than my political takes. No, it's a real thing, by the way. It's very real. Georgia, Atlanta, sixth graders. Black sixth graders go to one classroom. Black, white sixth graders go to another classroom. Georgia public schools, Atlanta public schools. You can look it up yourself. Same thing in San Diego. You might say, well, Charlie, what could possibly be the reason? They say that black students are threatened by white students, and therefore they want to have black-only learning environments, black-only dormitories, black-only cultural centers. It's nonsense. In fact, you are teaching racism to a generation that, quite honestly, was on pace to be the least racist generation in American history. But now we're raising many racists. And we are overemphasizing on such a great degree something that I couldn't care less about. I don't care about the color of your skin. I care about your actions. I care about your character. I care about your soul and your spirit. Your skin color is irrelevant to me. That is a sloppy, lazy, and dare I say pernicious and evil way to judge people. Regardless if you're judging people if they're white or if they're black or anywhere in between. I think that's CJ. How you doing, CJ? Good to see you. You're doing a great job. Real tight. CJ is a friend of mine. He does a great job. And you go here, right? Yeah, it's awesome. You should ask a question later. And if you guys don't know CJ, you should. He does a great job. And big social media following, too. Very impressive. And you've been fighting against CRT, too, right? Big time. Nonstop, right? Yeah, it's phenomenal. CJ Pearson, he's great. You guys should all get to know him. This is a very serious problem. And so last night, though, was a chapter in America rejecting all these ideas. And that's how significant this is, right? Which is, okay, like, whatever. I might not agree with the right on abortion or guns. We can talk about all that tonight if you want. Might not agree with that. But all of a sudden, when you are telling my sixth grader that they're a bad person based on the color of their skin, that because they're a white person and the anti kind of white push, like, that's enough. Like, I'm not going to put up with that. And you saw that all across the country. Now, this is not just bad hiring practices. It's not just dormitories. It's not just graduation ceremonies. It has also impacted policing policy. And first of all, police, they're modern day heroes. They get the worst rap of any major organization in the country. Generally, police officers do a phenomenal job and they keep all of us safe in ways we don't even recognize or understand. And even the most anti-police activist, they'll be quick to go pick up the phone and dial 911 if there's someone coming through the window trying to kill them. That every one of those activists will be like, well, why aren't you guarding me at this time? And here's the thing. I could talk about police statistics and how convoluted they are and how upside down they are and this big lie of where people say, oh, yeah, you can't walk the street as a black person in this country without getting shot. It's nonsense. There's no data to support it. But what you see is in cities like Austin, Texas, when all of a sudden you have a war on police, the murder rate is up 80%. 80%. In Minneapolis, crime was up 40%. But here's the amazing thing. What happened last night? 75% of voters in Minneapolis rejected the defunding of the Minneapolis police. 75% of Minneapolis voters. And Seattle, everybody, just elected a city attorney who is super law and order, wants to restore funding to the police. Do you guys remember last summer when the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone was created? Chaz, right? Like a new country. Yeah, most people, and it's true, it's like a new sovereign country in America. Sure. Now we're seeing people push back against it. But the reason we're doing the tour as it is, as this being our last stop on the road outside of the one we're doing in Arizona, which is, it's very simple and very clear, which is that these bad ideas don't just, you know, kind of make you a little bit confused. They're not just like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Like, oh, that's racist. No, it's making America a much more dangerous place to live. Is that then all of a sudden you allow these untruths and these lies to be implemented. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, yeah, who needs the police anymore? Then innocent people all of a sudden start to get harmed. And so that's the reason we named the tour what we did and why we're kind of on this ambitious, I guess you could say, crisscrossing the country talking about it. So there's a couple more things I want to talk about. Then I want to do some questions because that's the most fun. And I want to hear from you guys kind of what's happening. A couple things. I really want to talk about fraternities and sororities because I know that's a big deal here in the South. Am I right? Is that a big deal here? Big? Someone boo? That's not right. Let me say two things. Number one, let me talk about the South. I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. And many of you know this. Anyone from Chicago? Yeah? One person. That's awesome. I'm sorry. Jeez. Wow. Okay. Say something next time. There you go. So you guys might agree with this or disagree, but at least where I was raised, and it was always kind of not so subtle from teachers and from people in my community, there was this arrogance of being in the North that you're better than the South, right? And that there is kind of this, and people in the South have no idea that they're like, what? I never knew that. Like, sometimes it's kind of like a memo that people north of the Mason-Dixon line look down on the attitude, the accent, the history of the South. And this is best kind of manifested in Northerners, me being one, now living in Arizona, which is neither, I don't know what it is, Southwest, I guess, wanting to remove monuments. And I've always been so disgusted by the removal of monuments for a variety of different reasons. And people say, well, Charlie, what do you support, slavery? I'm like, that's such a ridiculous argument, obviously. No, I support allowing certain areas to commemorate things that happen in the way they see fit. And maybe that's a statue to say we never want to have that Civil War happen again. Maybe that's a statue that says we're going to remember the sacrifice of our fellow countrymen and people that we knew and people that are, you know, that we were related to. And we have it there for a reason. The removal of history actually creates radicalism. The removal of history creates more radical people. And sometimes history can anchor you. It could sober you. It could create discussions. But when you remove it altogether, that is an arrogance that I think is imposing in an imperialist mindset of people that do not live here, all of a sudden telling people in Alabama and Mississippi, we're better than you. You don't understand. We're richer than you. We're smarter than you. And you think, you might not know it's that explicit. It is that explicit. by a lot of people in the North. They won't say it. They won't say it out loud. They'll pretend it doesn't exist. They have contempt for people south of the Mason-Dixon line. And let me tell you why I think this is ultimately beyond disgusting. You know who serves in our wars disproportionately? Seven states comprise 44%. Seven states comprise 44% of the U.S. military. Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, South Carolina, and in North Carolina. I think that's seven. Yeah, that's right. That's right near there. Seven states right in this part of the world. Whenever there's a war or conflict, this part of the country rises up a lot more than people from Manhattan to go defend their freedoms. And so excuse me when all of a sudden I start to say, hold on a second. Like, you're now going to come parachute in like random lawyer from San Francisco who's never done anything meaningful or heroic in your life to go tell the people of Birmingham or Huntsville or Tupelo or from, you know, any, you know, Jackson, Mississippi or Athens, Georgia. Like, no, you got to go take down the statue. Like, meanwhile, one in five homes in some of those communities are sending one of their sons to go die in a war so that you can remain free. And that's a big deal. And the South never gets credit for that. Instead, the South gets, it is something that is a nonstop propaganda campaign. And I got to be careful the way I say this because the media is so unbelievably dishonest. It's unbelievable. There's kind of this thing where like people from the South are now afraid to be proud of the South. That's a real thing. We're like, oh, it's white supremacy. It's like, no, it's not. It's garbage. Like, be proud of where you're from. Everyone should be. Be honest about what happened where you're from, obviously. I'm not trying to say you should forget it or erase it. But this part of the country in World War II, yeah, there was a disproportionate amount of people running into voluntary service to go storm Normandy Beach. That's a big deal. This part of the country was that rose in record numbers after 9/11, disproportionate service. And I could go on and on and on. But there is this intentional campaign to have people from the South, and I mean all people of all backgrounds and all different races, to all of a sudden kind of submit to an Eastern metropolitan political agenda. To be like, okay, you're right. You know, this part of the world, we're awful, we're terrible, we're bigoted, even though no one in this room was even remotely even close to being alive when the injustices they're expressing happened. Is that you are many generations removed from that. Many of you, and some of you didn't even, some of you have parents that moved down here from other parts of the region. Now, why is it important that I'm saying this? Is that there is a regional conflict happening in our country right now. And the regional conflict comes from San Francisco and Manhattan and Chicago and Portland and Seattle and Boston and Washington, D.C. And this part of the country, they are trying to get to conform and they want to have everyone kind of go on this nonstop apology tour for things you didn't do, for people that you might not even be related to. And so, yet they in San Francisco, they're the ones that are like anti-racist or the ones in Portland or in Western Washington, and they have black only dormitories. Last I checked, University of Alabama doesn't have black only dormitories. In fact, if they did, it would be racist. And so you think to yourself like, oh, that's kind of weird. Which is the one that's actually implementing Jim Crow 2.0? Is it the fine people in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or the bigots at Columbia University that have black only graduation ceremonies? That's funny. Who's the one that's actually talking about race all the time? And so I always feel compelled to talk about this whenever I visit in the South. And I say this again, as someone who didn't grow up here, you can obviously tell by, you know, my accent. I don't think I have an accent. I think you guys have an accent. We can talk about that later. Okay. But anyway, that's just the way the world works. Is you should be understanding and you should be proud of where you come from. You should know about it. You should know the history. You should know the context. You should know the nuance. Do not defend the indefensible. Obviously, some reporter is going to say something out of context. That would be outrageous. Instead, understand the whole arc of your region. The lack of that all of a sudden will deteriorate the beautiful things of the South. How about the Christian-centered culture of the South? The family-centered culture of the South? How about the grittiness, the ruggedness, the connectivity, the community? These are things that are totally lacking in other parts of the country that the South is excelling at. The South does that better than anywhere else. You call it Southern hospitality is kind of like a joke, right? That's a big deal. It is. You go to San Francisco, no such thing. And you're like, well, and you're like, they might have like San Francisco hospitality. I've never heard of that before. Okay. Heard of like San Francisco defecation, but like if that's their version of hospitality, then like, I don't know. But yeah, I guess I don't have to dwell on this too much. You guys can feel free to disagree. Don't hate yourself. That's the bottom line. It's a bad existence. Don't allow people to hate things about yourself you have not done. Now, if you participated in this and you're like an awful, terrible, evil racist, then I got a whole different speech for you, and you got to go find Jesus Christ, and you got a lot of people to forgive. You got a lot of people that you have to ask forgiveness for, right? A lot. But if you are a 20-year-old who lives in Alabama and you're from Huntsville, and you've been told now from every single person that you have to go on this nonstop life cycle of just destroying and abolishing everything that came before you, that's awful. It's terrible, and it's not the right way to live. Okay, let me talk about fraternity. So, which is kind of connected, right? I'm told fraternities and sororities are a big deal here. Which, by the way, I know they're a big deal because I just drove by these mega palaces that call themselves fraternities and sororities. My goodness. I mean, it would make the ancient Greeks, you know, stop in shock. You'd have Aristotle, Socrates, Plato. Like, wow, that's really impressive. So, yes. Front page of the Washington Post. Anyone ever see this article in the last week? Because it's coming here to Alabama soon. It's time to abolish college fraternities. This is the front page of the Washington Post, right? I'm going to read directly from it. If you associate fraternities with sexual assault and harassment, you're not stereotyping, you're paying attention. A 2019 report sums it up. Research on fraternity men has continuously found that they are much more likely to commit sexual violence than men not in fraternities. More than three times as likely, even though as one study showed their prior history. So what's responsible for the increase? According to the report, quote, it appeared to be fraternity culture itself. As with mass shootings or deaths of black Americans in the hands of police and the public, it's outrage. And when I read this, I said, okay, that's your data point. The thing that's so easy to debunk of 30 unarmed black Americans in the course of 2 years were killed by police officers, many of whom were grabbing for the gun or trying to run them over with their car. Anyway, we could talk about that a different time. They say, it continues by saying, but unlike with gun violence and racist policing, yeah, totally unbiased author, right? A single determined institution can abolish the problem. Without fraternities, the Washington Post says, life is much better. Quote, women can go wherever they want to go. It's the Washington Post. It's deep. It's profound. No, this is a real story. You can look it up yourself. Washington Post. It's time to abolish college fraternities. Now, that definitely got the crowd worked up for good reason. Why do they hate fraternities and sororities? Oh, I'm really going to make headlines with this one. I can't wait. Well, first of all, they last and they were there. They've been around for a while. They don't like anything that is old. Things that are old deserve pause and you should study them and understand why they've lasted. Having things to last is hard. It's very hard to make things last. It's easy to tear things down. It takes no skill to go tear down a statue. Zero. It takes skill to live a life worthy of putting up a new statue. That's a big deal. And instead of trying to have people stop and pause with wisdom and say, huh, what good could come out of fraternities? Such as friendships for a lifetime, trying to create better men, social circles, all these different things. Not to mention, fraternities tend to be the most patriotic conservative communities on campuses. That's the real reason they want to get rid of them, by the way. And it's part of this entire agenda of a war on men. We know that, obviously. The emasculation of the American male. And this recent op-ed in the Washington Post is like, I know, if any of you wrote the way that these authors write in the Washington Post, I would think that your professors would fail you out. Instead, it's, without fraternities, life is much better. Women can go wherever they want. Imagine that. It's like, you write like this? As if someone would write on Tumblr. I don't know if people write on Tumblr or not, but like, it doesn't even make sense. But it kind of goes to this question of, and it's going to come here eventually. I don't think it's going to have much success at University of Alabama, right? But the point is this, is that you have to understand that there is an all-out assault on things that have lasted, right? And it started with monuments, and now you have op-eds that are saying get rid of fraternities and sororities. Not yet sororities, just fraternities, right? But I'm sure sororities are part of it, which is they also don't like how autonomous fraternities are. This is another thing. They don't like that they're able to operate and exist outside of the university structure, right? They don't like that they have their own elections, that they have their own leadership structure. A lot of time they're able to raise their own money, and they also have their own accountability structure. And here's what bothers me about this story. It's as if the only people that do bad things are from fraternities. That's complete and total nonsense. We know that's not true, right? The question is, what has the Greek system done for the country? The answer is a lot. The answer is that some of the top innovators, leaders, risk takers, entrepreneurs have come out of the American Greek system. is that it's created phenomenal leaders. And I will tell you this, that schools that have gotten rid of their Greek system, they become miserable places. They do. Schools that have totally abolished their fraternities or sororities, mainly Ivy League schools that have kicked them off campus, all of a sudden you start to have, you, especially fraternities, men that become even further directionless. Fraternities, for some men, give them purpose, give them direction, and give them accountability at a stage in life where they need it the most. They hate that. They would rather have them go to some college administrator, to some sort of, I don't know, diversity, equity, inclusion seminar to go find purpose and meaning. No, instead it's like, no, you're going to show up at the fraternity with a job to do. Like, here's the hierarchy. You're going to have to wait a couple of years to climb up that ladder. If you do your job, then you will be rewarded. That's called a meritocracy. That's how life works. And I can tell you that there is a significant difference in the private sector of people that were heavily involved in their fraternity and people who were not. I'm not saying they're better. I'm not saying that there's some sort of like, this is an exact rule, but I say the same for sororities as well. And not to mention, it also solves one of the key problems on college campuses. Like, how do you meet people, right? Well, that's probably pretty important. But the final thing I'll say on this, which is super important because it ties all together, is it instills values that the left hates. Community, unity, brotherhood, and responsibility. Is they hate those things. And instead, they want to have what? Division and discord, right? They actually do not want to have people come together and be able to, especially at a young age, coexist in a rather profound and powerful way. Okay, let me close with this, then we'll do some questions. I encourage every single young person here to understand that as you graduate college and as you're involved in all these things, it's going to be up to our generation to turn this thing around. Now, it's very important. Do not boomer bash. Okay. Don't bash boomers and say, why did you guys give us such an awful state of affairs? But people say, Charlie, what does success look like for the conservative movement? It needs to be easier for every young person in this room to get married and have kids. It needs to be easier. It is really expensive and hard for young people to get married and have kids in America. And so we need to develop a policy portfolio where it doesn't take, for example, it used to take 36 weeks of work a year. I never get this right. 36 weeks of work a year in the 1980s to be able to support a family of four. Now it takes 53 weeks of work a year to support a family of four. Where 53 weeks, meaning it's more than 1 year. You have to go into debt to support the family, right? And so it would require then the other spouse to go into the workforce, or it would require the family to go into debt. So what does that mean? It should be optional for the other spouse to go into the workforce. We need to create a set of affairs where it's easier to have big families in America. Right now, it's increasingly difficult. When some of you graduate, you're going to be entering an economy that is going to be a high preference on renting, not owning property. America becomes a less safe and more dangerous and, I would say, unfree country when people rent property and they don't own property. This is the least married generation in American history, millennials, not Gen Z. It is the most miserable generation in American history as far as mental health, suicide, and all of that. And you ask yourself the question, what are we going to do about it? Are we just going to say, just kind of sit on the sidelines? No, I think we actually need to start to recommit ourselves to things that give people purpose and meaning, like marriage and having children. Those are things that young people should always be told. This is an ideal that you should run to. This is where a lot of the people, you know, kind of scream me off campus, which is that, and again, I'm not going to tell anyone how to live their life. I really don't care. But I will say this, that you will be a happier person the earlier you get married and the earlier you commit yourself to one person, that you will be a happier person. I could say it from experience. I got married in May and it's amazing. And I could go into dating advice and all that. People ask me that all the time. Not exactly. We did that in Clemson. It was a mixed bag, to be perfectly honest. So very simple. Men, get your act together. Seriously, become someone that women want to date. Okay. And so the young ladies always like they're like, yeah. So right there. Yeah. The number of people say, Charlie, young women can comment in the question portion if they agree or disagree. The number one thing that I believe that young men need to understand is that self-control is far more important than self-esteem. Is that if you are not able to control yourself, if you are not able to go 3 months without having a drink, if you are not able to show other young women that you can't control your natural impulses, then why on earth would they want to be with you? And this is a huge problem, is that a man that is able to control himself is a very desirable and rare thing in American society. And I could see by every young lady nodding their head right now, I have just hit a 10 out of 10. And young men are like, well, what does that mean? Go find something difficult and go do it and forsake the easy. That's what you do. Maybe you got to wake up at 6 a.m. for a month straight. Try it. It's hard. Maybe you got to go a whole quarter without taking a drink of alcohol. It'll be rewarding. And some people, you know, they laugh. They say, oh, wow, I don't know if I could ever do that. You all of a sudden want to become someone that's different, someone that has purpose, not just meandering. Sometimes it's going to take sacrifice, because things that are wonderful in life usually take a lot of work. Things that matter don't just come by scrolling through an Instagram feed or filling out an Amazon kind of delivery box. It takes the betterment of the soul. It takes an aim and dedicating oneself to it. Now, for young ladies, I got nothing for you. My wife can give you all the dating advice in the world. But for your young men, I got nothing but harsh teachings for all of you. But you know what? That's what you want to hear, because young men want to be challenged. Because young men are not being challenged. They're not being treated by men. They're being treated by like these metrosexual creatures of the American college academic. No, it's true. You have to be safe. Get your act together. Stop acting like a bum. Do something hard. Wake up earlier. You're better than that. That's how men need to be communicated to, especially in an increasingly fatherless society. Are you worried about America's future? Times of trouble are full of reasons to despair. But those who built and have preserved our country did not despair. And if we are going to do our part, we need to draw on the books, the history, and the ideas that gave our forefathers and mothers strength and inspiration. Hillsdale College, the beacon of the North, the last college, was founded in 1844 to teach all of these things, and it teaches them still today. The great news is that we can study all these things, along with Hillsdale College professors, right in our homes. I take the Hillsdale online courses, and in fact, I'm going to go to Hillsdale right now, to charlieforhillsdale.com. I'm going to show you directly how I'm doing with my online courses. And I'm going to tell you what courses I have finished, and you guys can do it alongside me. Boom, finish Introduction to Western Philosophy. Boom, finish Western Heritage. Boom, finish Intro to the Constitution. Boom, Aristotle's Ethics. Finish Constitution 201. Finish Constitution 101. Finish Winston Churchill and Statesmanship. I am starting and working my way through a proper understanding of K-12 education in theory and practice. The Great American Story, A Land of Hope. That is a big lift, everybody. I encourage you to do it. Introduction to C.S. Lewis, Writings and Significance, The Presidency and the Constitution, The Genesis Story, Reading Biblical Narratives, and Civil Rights and American History. I'm working my way through all of them, but things that matter take work. And through Hillsdale's free online courses, we can study the history of our civilization, the wisdom of our ancient and Christian philosophers, the writings of Shakespeare and Mark Twain. We can reacquaint ourselves with our Constitution, and we can learn how the Constitution has been undermined, and more importantly, how it can be recovered. My friends, as we fight in the defense of family, faith, and freedom, let us draw on the best of the past with Hillsdale's guidance to save the greatest nation on earth. Begin learning today at charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. Check it out today. Enroll for free. Just put your email, charlieforhillsdale.com. All right, before we get started, this is a mostly conservative audience. If someone who is on the left or a liberal comes and asks a question, do not interrupt them. Do not heckle them. Do not mock them. Do not ridicule them. Give them the respect they never give us. Okay? Let's do the first question.
Hi, Mr. Charlie. My name is Carolyn Smith. It's so nice to have you here. I actually met you backstage at YWLS when I was going to meet Laura. But the question I have for you is, how do we preserve election integrity moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. So I think last night shows that our focus on election integrity has actually bear some fruit, which is that focusing on fair and free elections, I think, actually made the other side less likely to cut corners and engage in shenanigans and tomfoolery and all that sort of stuff. But also, I want to make sure, because I get this question a lot, Charlie, what's the point of voting, right? Edwin Durr is the point of voting. Because that guy rejected cynicism, right? And this is a very important balance, right? Which is, you can be pro-reform minded. Don't ever say, oh, what's the point? You know, look in Virginia. Youngkin won the governor's race because people showed up and they believed in the system, right? Now, with that being said, we need voter ID. We have to get rid of this entire mail-in ballot nonsense that has been plaguing our country. We have to restore strict signature verification thresholds. And is it Edward or Edwin? Where's Connor? Is it Edward? Are you sure? All right. Edward Durr. And so it's, if we do not have faith in our elections, then people are not going to have faith in their leaders. But here's the thing, is that the more we talked about it, I think we spooked the other side from doing what they did previously last night. So I think the emphasis on the issue actually has helped in and of itself. So thanks for being here tonight. Super glad you were at YWS. Thank you.
How you doing? I'm Adam. I go to the University of Alabama, and I'm from New York City. So I was just wondering, because they, like, you know, the athletes, like Kyrie Irving, for example, they're not allowed to play because they're not vaccinated. So I was just wondering, how can we stand up to their tyranny about the vaccine and the forced vaccinations? And, like, how can we, because a phone call won't do anything. So, like, how can we, like, stand up to the government of New York City, to the mayor, to, like, the borough presidents? How can we do that in order to stop the forced vaccinations?
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, I hope Eric Adams, the new mayor of New York City, who's hopefully going to be less radical, I hope he releases this order. And look, I don't know how smart he is, but honestly, Kyrie Irving is more courageous than most Senate conservatives that I know, truly. And I could say that, I mean, Kyrie Irving and Ice Cube are, no, I mean, but it's, it, so I mean, I, this is a serious question I want to ask all of you. Would you give up $9 million if it meant not taking the vaccine? Maybe you, yes. But some people would say, take my chances. 100%. Ice Cube, he literally walked away from $9 million for a movie in Hawaii because he did not want to take the vaccine. Kyrie Irving is walking away from what, 20 to 30 million just this year and his entire career, right? And so, yeah, it's a pretty miraculous thing. And I just want to reiterate this, though, which is that you're not going to be able to take your country back without some form of sacrifice and without some form of cost. I don't have any great advice on how to navigate the New York City bureaucracy, but I can say this, that Kyrie Irving, he has really showed me that he cares more about principle than money. And I can't say that for most professional athletes. Most professional athletes, it's all about, you know, signing a deal and just getting rich and getting paid. And so he deserves our support. He truly does. And I think we have to keep the pressure on. And honestly, he has my full respect. And so few athletes have been able to do what he's done. So thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate it.
Hello, my name is Jake Babich. I'm going to preface this by saying that I'm more of a left winger, but I do appreciate how open you and other right wingers are to discussion, especially considering our similar upbringings growing up in the suburbs of Chicago. Cool. With that being said,
which suburb?
You know where, like, Orland Park is?
Yeah, I know where that is.
I'm just south of there. Yep. Ever since the 2020 election, it seems that conservatives like to claim that there is election fraud after any time they lose an election, especially last night when many conservative influencers such as Laverne Spencer were claiming that there was voter fraud and they wanted to bring in the lawyers into New Jersey. However, in Virginia, where Youngkin won, there was no mention of voter fraud or any of that kind of stuff on either side. Is this going to be a trend to be a claim to claim fraud anytime Republicans lose elections? And if so, would you ever provide the sufficient evidence that it exists?
That's a thoughtful question. First of all, I think there was fraud in Virginia. I just think that we had more people to show up so that we could compensate for the type of margins that would be there. Now, let me be very clear about kind of what I mean by that. First and foremost, mail-in balloting. If you look at the amount of mail-in ballots that were sent in the 2020 election and signature thresholds that were lowered, especially in the state of Georgia, right? So Georgia went from 248,000 mail-in ballots to 1.2 million mail-in ballots and dramatically relaxing its signature threshold standards. You cannot confidently say that Georgia had the infrastructure in place to be able to facilitate the election the same way they did in years prior. And the mail-in ballot issue is really, really the most important, in my personal opinion, because you do not know certainly who's filling out the ballot. You don't. And there are plenty of examples how ballots are sent to multiple homes. The way that elections were done when you and I grew up in Chicago is you had to go to a precinct, actually show up and vote and actually show that you're in the register and vote. You didn't have to show an ID when you and I grew up in Illinois, but that's a different issue. But I think one thing you and I can both agree on, though, and you say you're more of a left winger, and thank you for being here tonight and for your articulate question, is that there is something profoundly wrong with Mark Zuckerberg spending $420 million and actually going into the administration of the elections itself, hiring ballot counters, hiring people within the actual precincts themselves. But to your point is, yeah, I think there were plenty of shenanigans last night in Virginia. To what extent, we may never know. Bob Beckel himself went on television back in 2014 and said, hey, just wait on Fairfax County. We used to hold back the ballots, so we know exactly how to find them. Now, he might have been kidding and joking, or we might have seen some sort of growing trend that with the heavy mail-in balloting, there is this kind of growing uncertainty and uneasiness. But I would just like to ask you just a quick question. Do you agree that there was something wrong with the fourth wealthiest man on the planet spending $420 million to change our voting laws?
Yeah, I definitely think some of that caliber shouldn't be like involved in something like that. So I definitely, that's something where we could see common ground on.
I'm pleased to hear that. Thank you, man. Roll Tide. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Kirk. I'm Christian Martin. I'm a lifelong resident here in Tuscaloosa. First off, I would like to preface the question by saying I really want to thank you and I heavily respect you for being a voice for Christ on the public stage. Now, I do disagree with you on many of the issues of today. I agree with you on some, but specifically, namely the vaccine. How is this vaccine and vaccine mandates for this vaccine constitutionally and human rights-wise different from, say, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine in public schools? And what is the constitutional basis to go against this vaccine mandate in comparison to an MMR one, which has been supported by the Supreme Court in many cases?
Fair question. I can give you three differences. Okay. Number one, this vaccine was rushed to market when MMR went through far more independent peer-reviewed trials. And this one was put into the market way quicker and some would say in a rushed capacity. So let me ask you a question. Do you walk around ever worried that you're going to catch measles or mumps or rubella?
No, sir, I don't.
Yeah, because those vaccines work. That's true. But right? And so,
of course, with the COVID shot, I'm not too scared about getting COVID either, though.
Right. So that's the second thing is that we have vaccinated people as far as the eye can see that are having what they're calling breakthrough cases, right? Whether it be the governor of Los Angeles, who Eric Garcetti, who had a breakthrough case, whether it be nine members of the New York Yankees team breakthrough case, every person here who has the MMR vaccine, we're like, huh. Okay, I'm confidently inoculated that I don't have to walk around in fear that I'm going to get measles, mumps, and rubella. Let me give you a third difference, though, and one that I think is going to hit a sweet spot with your opening remarks, which is that religious and medical exemptions are usually always granted to MMR vaccines. Is that when a mom or a dad will show up to a school system in most states across the country, 37 of them, they have vaccine freedom laws that if you go with a religious intent or a medical intent, you can get an exemption. We have millions of people across the country right now that are being denied medical exemptions and religious exemptions for this current vaccine, right? So those are three differences. And let me give you a fourth difference to the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and the current Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, BioNTech vaccine that we have on the market, which is the adverse event reporting system, right? So anyone here right now can go to VAERS.gov, VAERS.gov, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. I encourage you to go into the government's own publicly accessible website and go look at the adverse events to the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, which there are people that get paralyzed from the waist down from it. There are people that sometimes get adverse events, but those are minuscule, like 1 in 1 million versus the adverse events that happen to this current vaccine, where currently, according to VAERS, it shows over 17,000 deaths associated with the vaccine. Now, that might be low, that might be high, but that should be, hold on, time out. Anyone that goes to a government website and says that anything kills 17,000 people, that should be a reason to press pause and at least give people a chance to say, I don't want to take it. And the final thing is this, and I'll say a fifth thing, is you asked for a couple, I said three, but now here's five, is that, and maybe you would agree with this, do you think people that have already had COVID should be able to then say, I don't want to have the vaccine?
I think it would be a good idea for them to still get the vaccine because studies have recently shown that it is at least marginally more effective than just natural immunity to it from getting COVID. I got COVID in September of last year. I still got the shot, and I feel confident that it'll, you know, might as well just add a bit more of immunity. But on one, now three did answer it, but I was more looking for a constitutional law based
sure.
So answer in terms of like states' rights, municipal rights.
So if we go back to the precedent of it, you're right. You did ask that, and I didn't mean to dodge it. In 1904, there was a Supreme Court decision called Jacobson v. Massachusetts that did allow states and bodies to come in, not physical bodies, but let's say governing bodies or community bodies to come in and mandate the vaccine. It was Jacobson v. Massachusetts. Now, I find that Supreme Court decision to be highly questionable on a variety of levels. Now, that Supreme Court decision was used erroneously by Justice Louis Brandeis in the 1920s to sterilize 67,000 women who were deemed idiot women against their will. So just understand that is the precedent that they are using. Now, from a constitutional standpoint, some judges are agreeing with you. Some judges are saying that the law is there and the precedent is there. I'm encouraging every judge and every lawyer worth their salt, look at those five items I just mentioned. Now, let me just name what it says on VAERS.gov, V-A-E-R-S. And you guys can make all your own decisions as you see fit. And you've come very thoughtful and, you know, and you've thought about this, obviously. But I want you to think about this. According to VAERS.gov, there were 818,000 adverse events to this vaccine, 127,641 doctor visits, 83,412 hospitalizations, 92,000 urgent care visits, 26,199 people that have been disabled, 10,179 people with Bell's palsy, 10,304 from myocarditis, 8,408 heart attacks, 2,631 miscarriages, and according to VAERS, 17,128. Now, some people don't believe VAERS. Some people think it's low, it's high. So let me do this. Raise your hand if you know anyone that had an adverse event to this vaccine. Raise your hand. Yeah, that smashes everything you've been told on television. That's the most powerful point of data that shows everything I just showed was right. Either everyone that just raised their hand is a walking automaton of confirmation bias, or the 300 people that just raised their hand are affirming that there's something different about this vaccine than MMR. And I'll give you a sixth reason because you asked, which is this vaccine engages in mRNA type vaccine technology, which the inventor of such technology is a man by the name of Dr. Robert Malone, who has come out and he has said this vaccine is not like any others. You should press pause and I'd be very careful with it. Well, I want to thank you for your respectful question.
Thank you kindly.
And I hope I gave you something to think about. God bless you. Thank you.
How you doing, Mr. Kirk? My name is Noah Linehan. I'm currently a student here at Alabama. So I'm actually from just outside of Chicago as well. I grew up in Bolingbrook. One of the things that I noticed when I was in high school is we didn't have shop classes, wood shop, automotive shop classes. Do you think the lack of labor shortage that we have right now in this country is due to the fact that a lot of high schools around the country do not have these classes that promote the blue collar jobs of this country? And then the second part of my question, I know it's going to sound silly. Can I get a selfie with you real quick?
Sure. The first answer, it's even worse than that. It's that plumbers, electricians, police officers, and firefighters are deemed stupid. And everyone knows it. Everyone knows that that's how they're categorized and they don't know that it's true. Let me be obviously very clear on that. This is more for parents and less for students that are listening online or here tonight. Deep down, parents get very anxious and nervous and scared that their kid might have to become a plumber. And that's a real sad state of affairs. I went to, and by the way, the fact that this room did not erupt in applause is exactly why I love Alabama. Erupt in laughter, I should say. When I say that very same line in high-income areas, parents laugh out loud audibly. Like, oh, of course not. My son becoming a plumber, he's going to be a lawyer, not like some person that comes and fixes our stuff and we just write him a check and get him out of our nice house. You think I'm kidding? That's how a lot of people view the muscular class in this country.
Oh, when I worked, I worked the past couple of years working construction. I worked 2 years as a laborer. And just to see like people say like, oh, you're a laborer. And I'm like, yeah. And they would laugh at me. Well, I was making $17 an hour working as a laborer. I got myself an internship last summer, worked as an internship this summer. And I just got my first full-time job offer not too long
ago. Well, it's amazing. And let me say this, that I want millions of more people like you that work with their hands and have strong character and far less people that go to university and study North African lesbian poetry and don't know their direction in life. So you can come get your selfie. Great question. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, bud. All right, question.
My name's Joey. I'm from Lexington, Kentucky. And, I don't think I really need to preface this question much because I think we all know who I'm talking about. But what do you think of Joe?
Let's go, Brandon.
Gotcha.
Hey, everybody. Lately, I've been sounding the alarm about why we all need to be well-prepared in case the worst happens anytime soon. No, I'm not an alarmist. I'm a realist. I've been personally preparing myself and my family, and I hope you have too, because the way things are going, it's not looking good. And none of us should ever gamble with our family's well-being. That's why I strongly endorse My Patriot Supply as the go-to source for your family's emergency preparedness products. You'll find more than just emergency food. MyPatriotSupply.com carries about everything you'll need for the challenging times ahead. Plus, your order will be shipped quickly, much faster than the competition can. So go to MyPatriotSupply.com and get what you need quickly. They have food in stock, ready to ship, and unmarked boxes for your privacy. Don't wait and suffer the pain of regret. Things are falling apart, everybody, and you need to make sure you can feed your family if the worst occurs. I'm a prepper, and you need to prepare too. MyPatriotSupply.com today. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
I'm Mary Chapman Johnson. I go to Ole Miss, and my sorority...
They say hottie toddy at Ole Miss, right? Is that
yes,
right?
Sir. Yeah, there you go. So my sorority actually forces CRT training on us, and you get in trouble, like, if you disagree or, like, kind of make faces. I've been sent to standards for it. So I was just kind of wondering, like, how I can, like, take steps to combat it, because at this point I don't want to be an alumni or further associated with the organization after I graduate.
Yeah. So just want to make sure I understand the question. So that, so the direct question is just like, how do you navigate all that basically?
Yeah. Like, or how can I like challenge nationals? Cause it's my chapter itself is not the perpetrators of this. It's our national headquarters forcing it on us.
And what's the name of the nationals again?
Kappa Kappa Gamma.
Okay. Is anyone here? Okay. Anyone there? Kappa Kappa Gamma? No. So, and they're pushing kind of like the same sort of wokeism type stuff?
Or? Yes. Yes.
Okay. So yeah, you gotta strike a balance, cause they could be ruthless as you know, right? But look, this is something that when you get involved at this at a young age and you get engaged and you get involved, you realize that things that matter come at a price. But I would do everything with understanding that sometimes style can matter more than substance. And I would challenge this aggressively and ask them exactly who's putting forth these, you know, measures, who's, you know, under what circumstances and for what reason are putting this, you know, are they issuing this? So, yeah. And I just want to commend you. The fact that you're trying to push back against it, will make you a stronger person. This goes for every single person here. Fighting against the institution is hard, but doing it at a young age will develop your character in a way that is meaningful and is long lasting for the rest of your life. So I hope you're involved with the Turning Point USA chapter too.
Yes. I'm the recruitment chair.
Oh, awesome. Well, God bless you. Thanks for being here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Kirk. My question is, I am a student staff member at the University of Alabama. Recently, we got word that we would be required to take the Fauci ouchie. We were notified of the mandate only 5 days before we would be required to get the first dose of Moderna. We were not told how to apply for exemption until after the Moderna deadline had already passed. Today, having still not heard back about my exemption request, we have just passed the deadline to get the first dose of Pfizer. There's a lot of rumor that almost all the exemptions will be rejected. Other than quit my job, which will only hurt me financially, how can I, as an individual, stand up to an unfairly rejected exemption request and to this mandate as a whole?
Yeah, so this is a great question. This should not be happening in the state of Alabama, and there should be a zero tolerance policy. And I think that anyone here that has a stakeholding, you know, interest in the University of Alabama has to start making some calls. The governor needs to intercede immediately and sign an executive order and not allow this to continue in the state of Alabama for state employees, quite honestly. And I will be contacting Senator Tuberville to talk about this, because I think he needs to speak out. All it takes is a couple in a state like Alabama, word travels quickly. Things can be backed down, but I would apply for the medical and the religious. And you strike me as someone that does not want to take this vaccine, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, you should not be forced to take the vaccine against your will. And I just want to say help is going to be on the way. It's like this make a big difference. And I just want to say this. I want to thank the University of Alabama for allowing us to do this event. But be very careful, University of Alabama, forcing vaccines on your staff. You do not want to be made a national news spectacle in a state like Alabama. I could tell you right now, you are outnumbered in the state of Alabama, and it's not going to end well for you.
Hello, Mr. Kirk. I've lived in Alabama my whole life, and I'm glad that you've received such good Southern hospitality. And so what I just want to ask was, like, Republicans, we've had a really good day yesterday, last night. I saw your live stream.
Oh, thank you.
And you did make me laugh a little bit.
Okay.
When you were talking about the truck driver. And so, but my question is, so Republicans won a bunch of, like, a lot of races in Virginia, yes, last night. And so what's next for Republicans?
Well, I think I share a view that a lot of people share. Thank you for the question, is that I'm sick and tired of winning elections and losing the country. And that it's time for not, and by the way, last 24 hours were great, but Republicans need to listen to their voters. And Youngkin needs to do what he said he's going to do and ban critical race theory immediately as day one of governor of Virginia, right? We have to listen to our voters. We have to take it seriously in more ways than one. And I could tell you this, though, that, you know, if we look at what's happening in our country, we kind of are plagued by this ever-developing issue of people that are in kind of the Republican and Democrat parties of our country, right? And there's almost no issue. There's almost no difference between the two of them, right? So now it's time for us, the voters, to send a very clear mandate and message to the people in charge and say that, you know, we are not going to tolerate kind of the watering down and the lowering of expectations. And so winning elections is phase one. Then all of a sudden, you know, those of us that care about actually saving the country, then we need some real substantive action to follow that. So thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
God bless, and let's go, Brandon.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Jackson Sconcius, and I'm actually from Lowndes County, Virginia. So, yeah, we've been, like, I know. So I'm a poli sci major. I actually go to Stanford University in Birmingham. And so one thing that, like, I've wanted to do for, like, since I got here is to kind of, like, get politically involved, especially within Virginia, because as you and I know, you know, it's very corrupt, especially within Lowndes County. And my sister is in there right now, and she was supposed to be homecoming queen, but she got turned down because they removed the homecoming king queen stereo, and it's now homecoming queen person one and two.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just want to ask, you know, like, coming out of college, like, where can I start to, you know, like, start getting more politically involved, especially within Virginia?
Yeah. Well, you're not too young to run for office, and you're not too young to start to, you know, connect with people in Virginia. Maybe you should go work for the Youngkin administration and help them get rid of CRT in Loudoun County, Virginia. I think that would be a good start. But you guys all saw what happened in Loudoun County these last couple of months and became the center of the American political universe for good reason, because in Loudoun County, Virginia, you saw at the transgender bathroom issue, right? You saw a 15-year-old boy come in and rape a freshman girl, and then the school board covered it up and sent the boy to another school where he raped again. And that, and amongst many other things that happened in Loudoun County, I think flipped the governor's race last night. But my personal advice would be, get engaged, you know, join any campaign you possibly can. But the school board and the mayor's races matter a lot. Those city council races are extremely and critically important, to actually making an impact both locally and statewide in Virginia. And boy, Virginia probably made you proud last night.
Oh yeah, no, it was, I loved, like, it just, I was a little panicked because, you know, like, McAuliffe wasn't, like, conceding. So I was like,
I know.
Oh, Lord. So
I had PTSD from 2020.
Yeah, I was getting some 2020 PTSD.
I was like, they're going to, Stacey Abrams is coming in with the ballots, everybody, right?
No, but
she's bringing in piles of ballots.
I actually worked on Capitol Hill, so I, like, have a good, like, political understanding already. But, like, thank you for your advice. And I'm definitely going to use that to my advantage. Thank
All
you
right,
very much.
Great. Thank you.
How you doing, Mr. Kirk? My name's Trey Saradsky. As someone who battled and beat cancer in high school and due to my chemotherapy treatment, I don't really believe my chances with the vaccine are really good. How do I navigate the workforce with these large companies being forced with these mandates? Because I have an internship opportunity, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to take it or not because of the vaccine mandates and things like that.
Yeah. That's such a sad and sick thing if you think about it. That so you're a cancer survivor.
I am, yes.
And, you know, yeah, we should totally applaud that, obviously. And you're telling me now that you are going to be discriminated against as a cancer survivor. Is that the essence, right?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that's beyond wrong. Here, let me just say something. That congratulations, Republican Party, on your wonderful victories last night. If you don't step up immediately and start to pass legislation to protect voters from forced vaccinations, then we're going to have a little problem on our hands. Because people like you should not have to all of a sudden weigh career opportunities based on having cancer as a child because you don't want to have to take a vaccine. Now, have you already had COVID? I'm just curious. Yeah, you've already had COVID. So you're naturally immunized. And you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to get this job or not, or kind of your path forward with that. So here's what I will tell you, though. There's plenty of good places to work, like Turning Point USA, where we are not forcing the vaccine, where you can make your own medical decisions. I think you'll be warmly embraced with that. But I hope it doesn't come to this. But the leaders of the Republican Party need to step up and do the courageous thing and pass legislation. And they have to say that you are not going to force the vaccine on a population against their will. That's the best thing I could say for you. And saying you're a hero, right? We elevate cancer survivors for good reason as heroes. It's an amazing thing. But now you're a villain. Now you're unvaccinated. Now you're fighting the system. It's disgusting. And we should call it that because, someone like you should be, you know, walking into a workforce with nothing but optimism, not worried that somehow you're going to be working for your dream job and you get an email at 6 a.m. saying, oh, by the way, you have to submit your vaccination status by this date or you're going to be fired. So I just want to let you know we have your back, even though our political leaders do not. So God bless you.
Thank you.
My name is Erin. I'm a student here and I'm an African American studies major. But, one thing I do agree with that you haven't said tonight is the school choice thing. I do agree that you should be able to go to a school that's outside of your zip code. I went to a great high school. That's exactly why I was able to come here. But, my other question is that, what are some examples of critical race theory? Because I know like another girl came, she said that she had to learn CRT in her sorority. And what I thought it was is that, you know, you should know how to interact with people of other races, because I went to a school where it's, you know, mostly Caucasian people and I had to learn how to interact with other people. So is it something like that or is it something deeper that we don't really know?
No, it's super simple. So let me just kind of ask you, I bet we agree. Do you support black only dormitories?
Well, when I think of black only dormitories, I believe that you're talking about like maybe HBCUs because it's mostly black people.
No.
Where are these?
Western Washington University, public school in Washington, has black only dormitories. Is that something you would support?
I mean, I would probably live in one, but I mean, that I'm.
Wait, so
I mean,
you don't want to live with white people?
I didn't say, I mean, I didn't say that, but I mean, it's kind of hard. Sometimes like I have multiple, I mean, you know, I have a lot of white friends or whatever, but sometimes it's hard to fit in here. Well, when you go here and you're a different color, I mean, it's not hard to.
What would you support, white only dormitories?
Some around here. Not many black people go here, so it technically is white only if you think about it.
No, it's not. No, let me ask you another question.
I don't think anybody here would. Well, some people might, you know, support that. I mean, I never said I supported any only kind of thing.
That's why I'm asking, right? I think that, you know.
Do you support white only dormitories?
Absolutely not. I think it would be racist.
It's preposterous. I believe that.
And guess what? Black only dormitories are racist too.
I guess so. I might live in one if I could, but I can't, so.
Okay. Well, let me ask you another question. At Columbia University, they have black only graduation ceremonies. Would you support that?
I mean, is it just like, so are they not able to graduate with the white people? Is that why they can't?
Well, they have a separate ceremony just for black people.
Oh, I mean, I guess it's kind of like the separate ceremony when they don't want to go to graduation. They want to do it online. That's how I think of it.
So do you think segregation is evil and wrong?
I mean, black people weren't even able to join sororities here until 2012. So not the PhD ones. So, you know, segregation
that's not true. And like,
okay, when were PhD sororities and fraternities desegregated? 2013. Oh,
so you're trying to tell me that black people were not able to join a fraternity because of the color of their skin.
Do you remember George Wallace too? Segregation now, segregation, you know, for all, forever.
That's what that's what you're espousing when you say that black only graduation ceremonies or dormitories.
Black only graduation ceremonies are the least of our problems, least of yours. Do you think that you'll be able to go to an HBCU and have this same turnout and have these same people? Let me tell you.
I would hope so, but I mean.
So what would you say to them?
But here's the thing. I'm sorry, what?
What would you say to a room full of black people about?
You know what I'd say? I'd say your skin color means nothing. You're made in the image of God.
You're right. But, oh, I completely agree. But I can tell you right now, I'm a Christian. I believe in God, but I have been going here for 3 years. I'm a junior. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
I have most definitely faced racism and prejudice no matter what I believe in. And it's just really hard to sit up here and listen to people come up here and say, oh, I don't want to learn CRT. It's just making you able to interact with other types of people. I have no problem.
No, it's not. So let me just tell you. So at the Georgia public schools in Atlanta, they put black sixth graders in one classroom and white sixth graders in another classroom. Is that evil?
I've never seen. Can you show me a video of those?
Happy
of those
to.
Kids?
Atlanta segregation of public schools.
Well,
it was national.
I have, not to interrupt, but I have family members that go to schools in these areas, and I also have people who live in redlining districts
where they can't go to good schools. Do you support segregation?
No, I do not.
Okay, we agree. Therefore, black only dormitories and black only graduation ceremonies, and putting sixth graders in one classroom based on skin color or the other. Those are outgrowths of CRT.
Give me an example of what critical race theory is.
I'll be happy to tell you. So critical race theory is an emphasis at saying skin color matters, that the color of someone's skin is important in judging the value of the human being.
I get that. But if you were teaching a class that is like, That was talking about critical race theory. We were all sitting here.
Yes.
What would your lecture be? Like, tell me, what are your points? Like, who is this author that you're reading?
So Herbert Marcuse, an author by the last name of Spinoza, wrote a book called One Dimensional Man in the 1960s. Herbert Marcuse came from the Frankfurt School in the 1930s, and he started this at Columbia University. Coming out of a Marxist belief of power dynamics, he believed that that power struggles were not just the rich versus the poor, but also black versus white. And he wanted to expand the kind of conversation to also engage racial dynamics. Inherent in critical race theory is a belief that people are not individuals, they're members of tribes. Inherent in the idea of critical race theory is that there is no free speech or reason or scientific inquiry. These are white supremacist Eurocentric constructs that have been put into the Western world. And the one that I think is most prevalent, CRT believes racism is everywhere, that racism is the norm, that racism is within our systems, it's in our language, it's in our customs, it's in our codes, it's in all these sorts of things. Now, that's a super quick version of what CRT is, so happy to dive into that more, but I think we don't have to overcomplicate it, which is, do you think people should be judged based on the color of their skin?
It's not that I think that, but it's that it's happening. And you cannot ignore that I might not be treated the same as him as
so
he walks
You're right.
Door.
It is happening. Like at Coca-Cola, they say they need to train their employees to abolish whiteness. At AT&T, they said they would need to train their employees to get rid of whiteness. We have a supply and demand issue with racism in our country. We have an incredibly low supply of racism, an incredible demand to try to fulfill it. So we've created racism where it doesn't exist and try to turn everyone into mini racists against each other, which has now manifested itself into a massive anti-white movement in our country where I believe more than anything else, we should care about character, not skin color. Do you agree with that?
It's not, I don't believe that you understand what I'm saying. It's not that I don't agree with not, it's not that I don't agree with, you know, what you just said, but you have to realize that black people are like, white people are not being hunted after. Y'all can come here and live a great freaking life. Alabama is a safe haven. The PhD fraternities and sororities are a safe haven for white people.
You think you're being hunted?
Let me tell, y'all can laugh, but until you have walked as a black person on this campus,
Y'all truly don't understand. And I've gone to school with white people my whole life.
I will end with this. You're not being hunted at the University of Alabama, and there is no boogeyman that's trying to get you.
You're making it seem.
You live in the least racist country in the history of the world.
You're in Alabama. You are literally in the place where it's not okay.
You mean the place that has given you more talking time than any other person here, sit respectfully?
You're supposed to shut me down and be like, "Go sit down." Of course, I'm going to talk to you.
That would have happened 100 years ago. You're right. 100 years ago, you might not have been allowed to come into this room, which would have been evil. No, instead, we are here. We're creating a movement to say we never want to go back to the segregation that once existed in this country that is now being pushed by people in corporate America, in academia, and other places. We want to strive for a country that cares about character and the soul and the spirit of the individual, not on tribes, not on the melanin content in people's skin. And I will say this as compassionately as I can, is that you are not being hunted as a black person in America. There's not a single statistic that affirms that. There's not a single data point. Instead, the opposite is true. We are the least racist, most accepting, multiracial country in the history of the planet. And I pray one day you'll be thankful to live in that country. Okay. Thank you for being here tonight. Thank you.
Everybody.
CJ, come here. Really quick. I have a question. Come here.
Go right there. Okay.
So CJ, just really quick. You're a black person. Are you hunted at the university?
You know, I don't feel hunted at this university, but I guess the difference between me and some people here is that I don't choose to be a victim, Charlie, which I think is the biggest problem we have here today are people who wake up every single day looking for a reason to be oppressed, looking for a reason to cry and make an excuse about why they're not in a position to go win. I don't see the color of my skin as a disability. I see it as simply an accessory that I couldn't control. I've been black all my life. I've been black today, and I'm thriving here. I think that's a roll tide right there, right?
So CJ, let me ask you, CRT, racist?
It's not just racist. It's the exact iteration of white supremacy, just in reverse. I think it's important that we start teaching young people not to hate other people because of the color of their skin. We can teach black people to be proud of who they are without telling white people they should be ashamed of who they are. You know?
Amen. So, closing thought, CJ. Is this trying to divide the country?
It's not only trying to divide the country, it's trying to break apart the foundation upon which it was built. You know, people forget the words of MLK, Rosa Parks, all those people who fought so hard for us to be united country, where we didn't see the color of one's skin, but their character. This is about taking us away from the vision and the dream of Martin Luther King and just taking us to the dream of Kamala Harris. And I don't want to live that dream.
Amen. CJ, you're a great American. Give it up for CJ, everybody. So good. God bless you, man. Everybody, this was great tonight. I want to thank some of the disagreements. It was great as always. Everybody, Alabama is a great state. It truly is. And I just want to say God bless this wonderful country and for everyone being here tonight. And in closing, the future is dependent on what you do. If we act and if we're optimistic and solution oriented, our best days are ahead. It is a gift from the Lord to live in America, the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world. God bless you guys and roll tide. God bless.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, you can do so at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.